From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. We're continuing our season previews. We were going to do Michigan, you might have heard of them, defending national champions, and Nebraska. Zach, you're gonna have to, we have Zach on the line here, but you have to update us on like Midwestern weather because apparently there was a bunch of winds in Nebraska, and barns were blown over and stuff, so nobody could come on. So we shifted. David got Ryan Burns from the Minnesota Golden Gophers site, so we'll talk to him a little bit later. But we got Zach Shaw here to talk about Michigan, the Michigan Insider. Zach, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Welcome to Big Ten country, guys. I'm glad to have LA as a part of the footprint as someone who's been there a few times. And yeah, the weather, you know, it's hard to predict. You know, it'll be 85 and humid, and then the next day it'll be 65 and rainy. And I don't even know what's going on. Nebraska, they get wind different than we do in Michigan, where the lakes kind of protect us, the hills. Nebraska, I hear it's very flat, and I've been to a couple games there, and I think both times there were like 30-mile-an-hour winds, and they were just like, yeah, this is how it goes.
Yeah, we were like literally this morning, he was like, yeah, we can't do it. Like he sent me a picture, he's like, we have the truck of the family, so my brother's something like collapsed, and he was going over to fix stuff, so we had to really shift at the last second. So, but we are in the heart of Big Ten country here in Los Angeles. Right.
Yeah, this is the true heartland.
Yeah.
The highest concentration of Big Ten teams is right here in LA.
Yes.
15 miles apart. I mean, this is Big Ten country. All right. We got to get started with Michigan. Obviously, win a national title and then a huge amount of turnover, head coach, bunch of players, as expected, kind of moving on after that year. What are the initial thoughts on Sharon Moore and how he's taken over so far and how he's doing basically through a spring and now the start of fall camp?
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh had to be a part of Big Ten country out in LA, right? But but with Sharon, I mean, he is someone even before because he coached a couple games as like an interim coach last year. Even before then, I think most of us had kind of assumed he would be the next coach. Yeah, you know, wasn't sure when it would be, but you know, there were Power Five jobs, including, I believe, Colorado. He actually turned down initial overtures because he was like, look, if I stick it out, if I win a national championship at Michigan, this is probably my job moving forward. So, you know, he's been someone that really impressed Jim Harbaugh early on. I remember when he first got hired in 2018, he was, I believe, Michigan's first hire from a MAC school in years. You know, it wasn't they usually were getting other Power Five coaches or NFL guys. You know, he was at Central Michigan and they hired him, and first couple of weeks they were like, whoa, he's coaching these guys hard. You know, he's the tight ends coach. And they're like, you know, it's just the tight ends, man. It's fine. You don't have to coach him this hard. But then by the end of the spring, these players were like, no, we love it. Like, you know, he's got an ability to coach hard. You know, his phrase is coach them hard, love them harder. And I think in today's college football, that's like a tricky balance for coaches is, you know, how do you coach guys hard enough that they want to work hard and that they're playing disciplined football, they're playing with toughness, they're playing with grit without making them want to go transfer, making them want to go somewhere where it's a little easier. So that's, I heard a lot of the same stuff this spring. You know, I think the work ethic, the grit, the determination, I mean, it's at least what it was before. And it might even be, you know, depending on the position groups, it might even be ratcheted up a little bit because I think that's really his bread and butter. Everyone kind of knows him for that Penn State game when he ran the ball, 26 straight times or whatever it was, and they won. And so, yeah, he's very much, you know, he played for Bob Stoops. He's worked 6 years under Jim Harbaugh. I mean, he's very much hard-nosed, kind of old-school approach, but maybe, you know, he's 38, got a little bit of that new school thing. So the players really like him. They really swear by him. And I think the Michigan Athletics Department didn't have a huge debate on their hands, but if they had looked at other coaches, I think the players would have really – you know, stood on the table and honestly just threatened to transfer if it wasn't Sharon Moore. I mean, he embodies the Michigan culture that they feel helped them win a national title last year. And he, he's been pretty upfront. He says, hey, I can't be Jim Harbaugh. I'm not going to say the weird stuff in press conferences. I'm not going to have, you know, quirky catchphrases, but I do love football. I love that brand of football, and we want to keep it going.
Speaking of press conferences, Big Ten media days were there in Indianapolis. So really first time for Sherrone Moore to get out there and kind of pitch his brand for Michigan football going forward. How do you think he did, and what did you kind of learn about the Wolverines from media day?
Yeah, I think the classic scene I described to people is he walks out there. There's like 60 reporters because it's, you know, Michigan. All the national reporters want to hear what he has to say about different things. And he looks out at the crowd. He's like, you guys know Jim's not coming here, right? You know, it's kind of a joke, but it was interesting because I don't want to say it was boring. Boring sounds like an insult, but like he wasn't saying weird things. Like, I feel like I'm coming out of the football womb. You know, Harbaugh, he always had like a unique – unique is probably the nice way to put it. You know,
his love of whole milk.
Yeah. He always had like this kind of, you know, little catchphrase or quirky things that he would come up with to say. And that was kind of a smokescreen, so we didn't have to talk football. Sherrone, he was like, hey, let's just talk football. And so we basically got a depth chart. Michigan doesn't release depth charts. You know, we basically got a rundown of every position group. And you could tell the love for his players, but it was kind of funny. A lot of the national reporters kind of came in for their different narratives or their quirky questions or their Jim Harbaugh related questions. And about halfway through, they kind of left. They went to cover other things. And usually with Harbaugh, it was like you have only national reporters getting questions in, and they're asking, you know, way past the overtime and stuff. And so it was kind of interesting. And it'll be interesting to see how Michigan, you know, if it makes a difference. It might not make a difference, but, you know, under Harbaugh, you know, people like Feinbaum, people, you know, all the national pundits constantly had something to say about Harbaugh. I don't think they have the same, buzz for Sherrone Moore. So it'll be kind of interesting that Michigan, you know, not that they're a low profile team or not that, you know, people aren't going to start paying it or people are going to stop paying attention. But, you know, they're kind of going through fall camp and there's a little bit less like demand or media scrutiny or pressure. It's not like you turn on ESPN and they've got something to say about Michigan now. So it'll be interesting. I think Sherrone likes it that way. I think he'd rather, you know, have fall camp be about the football, about the players, you know, about trying to get better. And then, you know, if they win a few games, then the attention will come with that.
Obviously, a huge question beyond, you know, how's it all going to look with a new head coach, even though he coached a lot last year, is quarterback with J.J. McCarthy moving on. First, I want the definitive pronunciation on Alex Orgies. Yeah, okay, good. Just like making sure.
Yeah.
Just making sure. And then second, is he going to win this thing? Is Jack Tuttle going to win it? What's the sense of things heading into August? Do you think it's decided already and this is just playing games, or is there real competition ahead?
I thought maybe it was a competition in name only, but talking to other people, I think there really is a competition here, and it's not necessarily – it's kind of a unique deal because Alex Orgie, the way he plays, is a lot different than the way Jack Tuttle and Davis Warren. Those are kind of the two other guys. I mean, it's just kind of interesting because Orgie, you know, in terms of his athletic talents, he was, Michigan has this like key performance indicators thing. He was Michigan's best athlete last year. I mean, they were repping him at kick returner, at punt returner, and he was like quarterback and he was playing some running back. And I mean, they probably could have moved him to linebacker and he would have been in the mix there. So he's a very unique athlete, but he's only attempted one pass in two seasons at Michigan. And so he's the favorite, but I think he's mainly the favorite among fans because, you know, of the ceiling, of the potential, because he's got a very strong arm and everyone kind of is thinking, okay, well, if he can become accurate or add some touch to his passes and master Michigan's playbook, you know, he can be as good as anyone. You know, I think Jim Harbaugh called him, you know, Jalen Milroe, but more raw last winter. So, you know, there's a lot of optimism. If I'm being realistic, you know, they don't get to ramp up to Big Ten play, right? They get Texas week two, USC week four. You know, you do need someone who's going to go out and win you a football game, even if it's at home, even if, you know, you've got a great defense, even if you've got a great run game. So I think the question will be, it's kind of, can Alex Orgie pass the other guys in terms of touch, in terms of accuracy? It is an open competition, and they're giving Jack Tuttle a chance because he missed all of spring. He was their number two last year. This guy's had some crazy luck. He was a backup behind Tyler Huntley, Michael Penix Jr., and J.J. McCarthy throughout his 6 years in college. It's like, man, he he can't catch a break. You know, everywhere he goes, he's the other guy. So, you know, they're going to
give him the one who he was the one who was lifting them up with his strength of competition. That's
right,
what
right.
I'm spinning it.
All those jackpots on the bench. You know, he was exactly. really bringing it. So,
yeah.
But still, you know, they're going to give him a chance. And he was pretty good as a number two last year. And I think, you know, he actually has started Big Ten games. He has actually played at the college level. Him, Alex Orji, and Davis Warren haven't. But I think all three guys have a chance. If you're asking me to put chips on the table, I'm saying Orji just because I think the team really responds around him. He can make plays with his arm and his feet. And this is year three for him. I mean, this was kind of the year that Michigan, when they recruited him, was kind of like, hey, he might not contribute for 2 years. But year three, you know, that athleticism, I mean, it's hard to ignore. He's got siblings that have played edge, have played linebacker, you know, been all over the field and just comes from a really football-loving, athletic family. And so I think he'll win, but I'm also, you know, I'm going to be realistic. I mean, if he's not making passes under pressure and he's not, you know, making the decisions, they're definitely comfortable with Davis Warren and Jack Tuttle potentially being that guy.
Apparently, Orji's really good in the video game, so I'm sure
a lot
of Michigan
fans. Yeah, he's fun to play with.
Also, a fun name.
I'm a mobile quarterback in those games, right? Because I do one read and then I take off.
It's also a fun name to say over and over again. I had fun with Penix. I'm going to have fun with Orji. It's just going
to
be the
you
case.
Don't even have to, yeah. You don't have to change Penix.
I don't even have to. I don't even have to mispronounce it to make
just,
it work.
Just regular old Orji. I don't know how closely you followed the season last year, Zach, but Michigan won the national championship. If you're aware, and Jim Harbaugh wasn't the coach for like half of those games because of suspension and stuff. I know there were some reports this week or over the weekend about. Notice of allegations apparently or potentially coming for Michigan. Have you heard anything on those fronts of if there could be some sort of, you know, ongoing? I guess the investigation's ongoing. Harbaugh did sit out three games I forget which one this was. This was the recruiting one, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So he sat out three games twice. One was.
Oh, no. This is the Connor Stallions one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, the one that is still being investigated is the Stallions one. The one that he was suspended the first three games for, that's been settled. Basically, it came out as NCAA, I think it was like a two-year probation or something like that. And the actual violations were like level twos, which is not usually a big deal. But the fact that Harbaugh like allegedly misled, they gave him a level one for that. So you can take that how you will. I think that's the punishment for Michigan is done. But the Stallions one, the one that got way more headlines. There's reports about things. I can't definitively dispute, you know, the reports or anything. But what we've heard is that they were not expecting an NOA this week. I mean, they're just not really sure what is going on. I mean, I assume they want to get closure in before the season ends or before the season starts, before the off season ends, just so that people stop thinking about, you know, Ohio State, Michigan State fans, they keep talking the phrase they use, the hammer's going to drop. And Michigan is very confident, but also, you know, I've been around college football long enough to know everyone's really confident during these investigations. So,
yeah.
I don't have anything definitive. I don't have a scoop on it, but, you know, Michigan remains pretty confident that they're not going to have stuff vacated. They're not going to, you know, have some death penalty thrown upon them, if any. I mean, you know, the big programs, and I'm sure you guys have seen this too, you know, think about like Tennessee or some of the other programs that get caught up in stuff. It's like Tennessee had 18 level one violations, and I think they just paid fines for the most part to get out of it.
Yeah.
So kind of a weird time to be the NCAA. I know fans don't like them. I'd say I feel bad for them, but it's an unpopular take. But yeah, it's kind of a mess. I assume they want closure, but Michigan, in terms of how they're acting, they think business is as usual. They're expecting to contend for a championship this year. They're not expecting to lose scholarships or stuff like that. And I guess their approach is we'll see what the NCAA says. And if the NCAA views it differently, I would expect Michigan will try to fight it. You know, try to get an appeal like what next spring or whatever. It'd be typical NCAA investigation stuff at that point.
Yeah. And at this point, I mean, you're talking, I think people just want to move on. The fact that Jim Harbaugh is now, like you mentioned, here in the heart of Big Ten country in Los Angeles with the Chargers, that probably helps a lot. And there is a documentary coming out in like a month or like in a few weeks, the Netflix documentary, like Sign Stealer about him. So crazy, crazy stuff. We'll follow along.
Stallions, the legend of Stallions is so overblown, overdone. I mean, you know, and he for those that were curious, like he resigned? I can't remember that if he resigned or whatever, but he hasn't been a part of the program since October. This was a guy that, you know, no one really had heard of. And it's just crazy that like how he has just built this whole, like he's a nationally known name among college football fans at this point.
It's also another great name. Like it's just a fantastic last name. So I'm not focusing too much on defense because Michigan seems to return quite a bit. And my guy, Mason Graham, up there at defensive tackle is still there. Mm-hmm. And he caused a lot of anguish in UCLA fans' hearts last year when he said he originally wanted to go to UCLA and they never recruited him, which good job, Chip Kelly. My question is offensively, the offensive line loses, I think it's all five starters and then maybe one of their top backups from last year. What's this going to look like? I mean, I know Michigan's recruited well on the offensive line, but there's got to be some growing pains here. What do you expect from that group? Because, I mean, is Sherrone Moore going to be able to run the ball 26 times in a row with this group?
He would like to. He's going to try. You know, even if it's against Arkansas State, he might give it a go. But this is probably the one position where I'm going to give Michigan the benefit of the doubt a little bit. You know, the way that they've replaced offensive linemen the past few years. I mean, even they were obviously great on the offensive line last year, but then they won the Joe Moore Award for offensive line the 2 years prior. So, you know, they've done a nice job of kind of cycling guys in and out. And they've recruited, as you mentioned, they've recruited the position well. Gio Elhadi, you know, he's someone that other schools were kind of recruiting to transfer to leave. And he said, no, I'll be a backup for a couple of years and then I'll be at Michigan. Then I'll go to the NFL. He was a top 100 recruit. Andrew Gentry. I mean, I just looked it up for a different story. He's 22 years old. You know, he's a former top 100 recruit. The entire starting five is going to be over 21. Greg Crippen was a 3-year starter at IMG Academy. And then Miles Hinton, former top 100 recruit, started at Stanford, started 5 games last year. You know, he's back. And then they added Josh Preeb. He was a 3-year starter at Northwestern. You know, he's from the state of Michigan. You know, he seems to fit Michigan both as a you know, schematically and culturally. So it's actually a pretty good offensive line room. You know, it's big. They're all older. They've been in college for a while. I think Preeb has 29 career starts. Hinton has 21. I guess thank the transfer portal for that, you know, they can have two guys who at least have some experience, but they're pretty confident in Elhadi and Crippen. And then there's even some other guys who were also high profile recruits who are also, you know, 6'6", 6'7", 315 pounds. So it's probably the one position I'll give Michigan the benefit of the doubt on where, I mean, if Sherrone Moore's still around, you know, Grant Newsome, he's only 27, but he was just named to the AFCA board. I mean, he's seen as a rising star in the coaching industry too. And so, I'm skeptical of the receiver room. I'm skeptical of the quarterback room. You know, I think there's, you know, Michigan secondary, I think there's still a couple questions they have to answer, but offensive line, even with everyone that they lost more than 200 career starts, you know, from different guys to the draft. I don't know if it'll look like a finished product against Texas, but I think by the time it's football weather, right, in October, November. I actually do think it'll be a good offensive line. I think the question will it be a top five offensive line? Because the way Michigan plays, they're probably not winning any trophies if they don't have a top five offensive line.
By football weather in October and November, you mean 75 degrees and sunny, right?
I wish, man.
There's nothing. That's what we're expecting, right?
Yeah.
No?
When it dips into the 60s, like the high 60s.
When you got to wear pants instead of shorts, that's when it's
the.
Do you guys have any games you have to cover that are like November in the north this year?
I got to go Nebraska in early November. But honestly, the most brutal is probably going to be Washington in mid-November. But that's, you know, it's just wet.
Yeah. USC got pretty lucky. They don't really have like their Minnesota ones in October, you know, so they don't have too much too bad there. I want to talk about the defensive side of the ball a little bit. Looks like, I mean, lose some pieces, of course, but there's still a potential, you know, I think three potential like first round picks on that side of the ball. What do you make of this Michigan defense going into 2024?
Yeah, very, very star heavy, very top heavy, I guess. You know, Mason Graham, Will Johnson, those guys are projected top 10 NFL draft picks. in the new EA video game, they're two of the top 10 players mm-hmm. in the country. And they looked like it last year. I think what really impressed me about those two and Kenneth Grant is they weren't just padding their stats against, you know, so-so teams. I mean, they were showing up against Washington. Kenneth Grant had a big sack. Mason Graham had five quarterback pressures. Will Johnson, you know, his games against Washington, Alabama, and Ohio State were incredible. I think he was targeted 13 times. He allowed five receptions and had two interceptions. So, you know, these are guys who have delivered in big games on the big stage. And then I actually think the rest of the, you know, the other position groups have, you know, top line guys. You know, they added a linebacker transfer, Jayshon Barham. He's been a star at Maryland. You know, you could argue he was Maryland's best player the last 2 years on the defensive side of the ball. You know, Makari Page, he's a 6'4" safety. He probably could have been drafted last year, but I think the one more year fund and the opportunity to be a captain and everything like that was appealing to him. And then Ernest Hausman, he didn't start a game last year, but he was third on the team in tackles. I think he was like second in the Big Ten in missed tackle rate, things like that. So, you know, what really stands out to me is that they've got a top line guy at every single position. And so I think the next step is finding that depth, elevating that defense. You know, they hired Wink Martindale. They lost their defensive coordinator. He followed. He also wanted to be a part of Big Ten country in L.A. followed Harbaugh to L.A. And but Wink Martindale was his boss. You know, Wink Martindale, defensive coordinator, formerly of the Giants and the Ravens. He brought this up in a press conference. Seven of his former assistants are either NFL defensive coordinators or NFL head coaches right now. So, you know, he's kind of he's older, so we'll see, you know, what he does with the college game and everything. But he does seem like someone who's pretty masterful, highly qualified schematically. And so, yeah, I think that the question will be just how do the pieces all fit? How do the depth guys, you know, because they're one thing they really liked last year is they played their second string defensive front, you know, the edge guys and the tackles, almost exactly as many snaps as the first string. And there was no drop off. I mean, that fourth down stop against Jalen Milroe in the Rose Bowl, that was a second string unit out there. And guys like Josiah Stewart, Derek Moore, they're back this year. So, you know, you go through every position group. There's like two, maybe three guys that they feel really good about, but they would love to feel good about four or five guys total. So, you know, the secondary is probably where the biggest questions will be. They lost Mikey Sainer still. Rod Moore's out for the season with injury. They lost Josh Wallace as well to the NFL. So there's three spots up for grabs in the secondary. But up front, I mean, I'd put them up there with anybody in the country, you know, in terms of not just top line talent, but overall ability to make plays. So it's going to be a good defense. And looking at their schedule, they really need as good of a defense as they can get.
Last one from us. Looking at this schedule, a lot of takeaways. I would say it looks like a tough schedule. I would say Fresno State at home looks a little bit better now that Jeff Tedford, won't be coaching Fresno State in that game. But is Texas a neutral site or is that hosting?
That's in Ann Arbor.
Okay, so hosting Texas. And then of the, you know, expected to be contenders in the Big Ten, you got to play both Oregon and Ohio State, but avoid Penn State. So that's a small benefit. What's your take on this? And do you think it's possible to make a repeat run to the playoffs at the very least?
Yeah, I mean, my first takeaway is it's a lot harder than what Michigan's used to. You know, last year they didn't have to play, and they walked to 8-0. I mean, you guys could have coached them to an 8-0 record. It felt like. I mean, it's just, you know, part of that was Michigan was really good, but also they didn't have to play any ranked teams. Even their road matchups were not necessarily like these raucous, incredible environments. So, you know, that's going to be different this year. You know, they're going to have to show championship capabilities in week two. And you know, depending on, you know, I think USC and Washington are the swing teams where if they're what they can be, you know, then suddenly the schedule is just brutal. If those teams are down or whatever.
Don't worry about USC. You don't need to worry about them.
But, you know, if those teams are beatable, then Michigan might actually have kind of a three-game schedule this year. So, you know, it's very tough. But also, I'm looking around at the SEC schedules, the other Big Ten schedules. No one's got an easy schedule anymore.
Except
no
for Rutgers. Rutgers has an easy one. They avoid all of the top four in the league.
And I'm guessing the Big Ten probably was like, well, we got to give Rutgers a break because they just had to play Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. And exactly. Michigan State, when they were good, you know, nine straight years, all four of them. So But yeah, I mean, you know, other, if you want to win a championship, you're going to have to beat multiple top 10 teams in your regular season. So I think it's possible. You know, the quarterback part is a big question mark. O-line's a question mark. You know, I think the, just the passing game in general, receivers kind of a position I would say is in a rebuild instead of a reload situation right now. I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm not predicting them to go 12-0. I predicted them to go 12-0 last year. I can't predict that this year. You know, I think the I think there's just too many offensive questions, and the other teams are just ready to roll. I mean, Texas, I don't know a ton about Texas, but it seems like they're ready to go. Oregon feels like they've got a lot of talent at every position. Ohio State hosts Michigan this year. I'm sure they're as hungry as they've ever possibly been to beat Michigan. So it'll be a tough schedule, but I've also covered Michigan for a long time. I mean, the culture that they have right now, the physicality they play with, the grit they play with, the way that they get better throughout the course of the game, the conditioning is really strong. You know, I think it's hard for me to count Michigan out of any game either, just because the way their defense plays and the grit that they play with. And don't forget, I mean, most of this team, even if they weren't starting last year, was a part of a team that won a national championship. So they're not going to be fazed by, you know, a big game or a primetime game or anything like that. You know, they're going to mentally and emotionally, they're going to know how to weather the storm of these big games.
All right, Zach Shaw, follow him on Twitter, @_ Zach, Z-A-C-H, Shaw, the Michigan Insider. Give my best to Sam and everybody over there at the site. Appreciate you coming on and talking some Michigan football. You know, because we are in the heart of Big Ten country here in L.A. So we appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Zach.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back talking Minnesota. All righty, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions, and we are joined by Ryan Burns. So covering the Minnesota Golden Gophers, follow him on Twitter @RyanBurnsMN. Thanks for coming on, man. I know you were waiting a little bit while we were talking Michigan at the end, so thanks for coming on. We had a little technical difficulties at the front, but we got going a little bit later. But thanks again for coming on. Oh, and we got no audio from Ryan. Oh, you know what I did? That's me. I had you muted during the, I'm doing a lot of things. I set up this shot while we were talking to Zach. So can you talk now, Ryan?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
We can hear you now. We're a well-oiled machine. What you're going to learn about our podcast now that it's a Big Ten show is that we're really good at all of the logistical items. Like, I don't know, inviting you to come on 40 minutes ago.
You're all good. And again, we're going from talking about the 2024 national champ to talking about the 1960s national champ. Or if you want to get going a little bit more, I think I'm the two-time dynasty football champ of our 24/7 sports league here. Yeah. So, and you kept me waiting. I can't believe you.
There you go. Nice. Yeah, I'm in the league. I took over somebody. Do you remember who I took over for? But like, he had traded all his first round draft picks away and stuff. So it was kind of a bad deal. But I did get CJ Stroud with like the 24th pick overall. So that was pretty good.
Yeah, I think he traded them all to me for random various prospects over the years. So I'm glad to be sitting here with what I think is a juggernaut going into this fall.
Nice. Great. Well, thanks for coming on, especially late notice. We'd mentioned at the top of the show, probably don't get this kind of weather in Minnesota, but Nebraska had some really terrible like winds and stuff. So there was everyone on the site, they were like not able to come on. But we're going to talk to Minnesota anyway, so it's glad that you could do this last minute, though. But how's it been off-season-wise? Like, has it been – I guess we're going into year 8 of the PJ Fleck era. Like,
it's been that long?
8 years, dude. Like,
God. He's the third longest tenured head coach in the Big Ten now, behind James Franklin and Kirk Ferentz. Think about that.
Oh, my year God. Eight.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's –
That's a lot of boat rowing.
Different, I'll tell you that. Considering all the change we've seen over those 8 years, I mean, I remember that opening press conference where he was just, I think he had a little spiked up hair in the front, so enthusiastic. I mean, he's still five walking Red Bulls all the time, whether the camera's on or off. But we're talking about a program that has been pretty consistent over the last few years. Now, last year, a little bit of a step back, 5-7 in the regular season, but that's what happens when you find a way to blow a 3-score lead in the fourth quarter against Northwestern. And then you have Illinois at their own 15 on a fourth down with the backup quarterback coming in cold with about 60 seconds left. And three plays later, it's 85 yards and a touchdown. I mean, Minnesota should have been 7-5 last fall, but they've been a pretty consistent program for Minnesota. I mean, everybody remembers that 2019 season where they're able to beat Penn State at home and top 10 victory for them. They won 11 games that year, including a ranked team in terms of Auburn and the Outback Bowl. But it's trying to get back to getting to that 6-7 win mark like they had been pretty consistently under PJ.
This is, I guess, just from like a temperature of the fan base standpoint, you know, obviously they got to 11 wins in that third year and it looked like everything was kind of rolling. What is the general sense right now of what Fleck done? And you know, I know there was talk earlier this offseason, and we don't have to get into it too in depth, but in the tumult surrounding Chip Kelly leaving UCLA, PJ Fleck's name was mentioned a lot, may or may not have been a meeting or two. Did that trickle down into Minnesota at all? And did that affect anything this offseason? Just kind of what's the general sense of him at this point in the fan base and I guess at the university?
Yeah, the UCLA thing, I think, you know, like I do, is very real.
Yeah.
I wonder what would have happened if UCLA hadn't run a deficit for, you know, better than I do, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
They have a chancellor that was on thin ice, an athletic director that was on thin ice. They have no money. And if you're going to be able to buy out a Big Ten head coach whose buyout, I think at the time, was 15-something million or so.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty high. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to require some money. Plus, he's going to want a pay increase. And obviously, it didn't end up happening. And Deshaun Foster's now there.
In L.A. Deshaun Foster is in L.A., as is UCLA.
That's where USC is, too. I don't know if you knew that. Yeah.
That was quite the experience of Big Ten Media Days. I'm sure you guys have talked plenty about it, but I don't know who the UCLA SID is, but letting him go up there and not have a bunch of talking points ready, what is going on?
Not great. Not great, Bob.
Not great. Not a great first impression to the rest of the Big Ten media, I'll tell you that much. But heading into year eight, it's just trying to make sure that people remember, because in this sports market, I don't have to tell you two, LA is a giant market. Minneapolis has 4 pro sports teams as well.
Yeah.
And this isn't Iowa City, Iowa, Madison, Wisconsin, where you're the only show in town. I don't have to tell you guys, you have to compete in this market if you want to draw eyeballs. And so that's where, after a sub-500 season, it's going to be for him. You get USC at home. You have North Carolina on national television to start the year as well, that Thursday night on Fox. It's grabbing some eyeballs early in the season so people can remember, oh, by the way, there's still a college football team in town.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, there's a lot of history there, right, with Minnesota football. PJ Fleck had, I think, a lot of momentum, and there was, you know, especially the 11-win season and all that. Is it one of those things where you have these, you know, like these mottos or sayings, the row your boat and all that kind of stuff? You kind of like get people energized and does it like fall on deaf ears after a while? Is something like that, do you think, happening over time where it's the message isn't kind of as well received as it was when he first got there, kind of thing, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think it's still well received. I mean, you go back, you mentioned that 2019 season. I would argue that Minnesota would be a top 5 team in the country in terms of teams that lost momentum because of COVID. They have this magical 2019 season. They're arguably their best season in my lifetime. And then COVID strikes, fans can't come to the games, just losing that fan reaction in terms of season ticket sales, in terms of just eyeballs on your product. It really hurt them. It also doesn't help that, I mean, peace and love to the University of Minnesota. If you're able to draw a 300-mile radius from Minneapolis outwards, 300-mile radius compared to any other Big Ten institution now, I'd tell you Minnesota has the worst recruiting radius of any Big Ten team, and I don't think it's remarkably close. I mean, the highest rated player in the state this year is only an 87, according to our 24/7 sports ranks. I mean, I looked at New Jersey the other day. They got 22 players higher ranked than Minnesota's top ranked player. It's tough to recruit here because there's not a ton of consistent talent here. But it's just trying to make sure that you can get back to that consistency. If you can just win 7-8 games every year, which, heck, the University of Nebraska would love to do that, considering they haven't been to a bowl game now in 5-6 years. I think you can start to build more of that momentum back. I don't think his message is necessarily falling on deaf ears. I just think people want to see a little bit more in terms of maybe some bigger wins.
Looking at Minnesota for this season, that offense last year obviously fell apart in a lot of ways. a lot of blame pinned on the quarterback position. New quarterback this year, the guy from New Hampshire. Is it Brosmer or Brosmer? What are we going with?
Max Brosmer.
Brosmer. Can this thing get fixed in a single offseason? Because I think it dropped into the hundreds in the SP Plus last year. Can this thing get fixed in a single offseason? What's your expectation, I think, for that group and for Brosmer in his first year as the starter? But he's had a ton of experience at the FCS level.
Yeah, so for people who don't know about Max Brosmer, he was a Walter Payton finalist, which is the FCS Heisman, out at New Hampshire, transfers to the University of Minnesota, had some other NIL opportunities elsewhere that would have been more expansive, chooses Minnesota nonetheless. I think the thing I'm curious to see with Brosmer is you talk to all the coaches. I think you know like I do. I don't think any of the three of us, in terms of the teams we cover, think that they are capable of losing an offseason. I mean, they were talking so glowingly about Brosmer at Big Ten Media Days, the way that he's come in and just been the guy. Now, the thing I'm going to be curious to see is you look at what Brosmer did at New Hampshire. He was very much a short passing game guy. Now, that's also what happens when you're at the University of New Hampshire and you have a fifth-round running back in Dylan Lobb, who's now with the Las Vegas Raiders. When your best player is an NFL guy at New Hampshire and he's a running back, you're probably going to force-feed him the ball in the passing game, which is why he's had over 150 targets over the last couple of seasons. Minnesota really hasn't featured much of a short passing game in general. So the question is going to be, not for me in terms of the passing game has been brutal since essentially 2019. They've been bottom 20 in passing attempts. They were one of the worst teams in the Big Ten last year in passing efficiency. If they can just become a more efficient offense, you do have some home run hitters. You have Darius Taylor, who is one of the best running backs in the Big Ten when healthy. You return an all-Big Ten receiver in Daniel Jackson. It's just about getting those guys touches in space. If you can become more efficient, I don't have to tell you guys, the play sheet for whoever your offensive coordinator is gets a lot more expansive if it's second and third and short versus second and third and long. So if Minnesota can get more of a passing game, I think that's going to certainly help things around here. There's optimism that that's going to be the case, but we're going to have to see. The proof is in the pudding with that.
We talked to different Big Ten programs, and Dave already mentioned Rutgers, kind of a benefit of not having to play Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State every year. Coming from the Big Ten West, where it was the easier division, what's kind of the outlook for Minnesota, where maybe you had some benefits where you weren't playing those teams all the time, and now the schedule is going to be a little more balanced going forward?
Well, I heard David mention earlier that Rutgers has an incredibly easy schedule now, and they certainly do. And I know that they're a team with a lot of steam right now because of how easy that schedule is. And defensively, I mean, there's a lot of crossover between Rutgers and Minnesota, whether it's Ethan Kaliak-Manis now running the show, Minnesota's former offensive coordinator in Kirk Shiraka, Minnesota's former defensive coordinator in Joe Harris-Simiak, PJ Fleck and Greg Schiano go way back. I'll tell you this, David, I'm very curious to see, like you are. In theory, that should be a 7, maybe 8 win team. Mm-hmm. But I also know it's Ethan Kaliak-Manis, the one throwing the football. And inconsistency really it was very inconsistent from that young man in his first year as a starter.
Amazingly, I think he's better than who they had last year. Did you watch that guy throw a football?
Gavin Wimpstead, now at Kentucky, right?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I mean, they were talking him up. They were talking up Ethan from spring. And I watched a couple of games of him last year, and I agree with you entirely that he maybe can't throw a football. And they were talking him up as if he was, oh, wow, this guy's actually more accurate than the guy we had last year. And I'm like, oh, man. Wow. Rutgers. What are you doing, buddy? I guess Minnesota's schedule – so I've been railing on Rutgers a little bit for having a very easy schedule. Minnesota's isn't that hard. Avoiding all of, let me see if I get this right, Oregon and Ohio State, and hosting Penn State. I mean, you got to go at Michigan, so it's not super easy, but I would put this in the middle maybe for the Big Ten this year. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, to me, the top two teams in the Big Ten and a tier by themselves are Oregon and Ohio State. You get to miss both of those. I still think there'll be two games on that schedule where you're going to be double-digit underdogs at best. I mean, we're talking probably 3-score underdogs, and that's going to be Penn State and Michigan. You got two games there in the first three in Rhode Island and Nevada, where you're going to be 2-3 score home favorites. And then every other game, the remaining eight games, to me, I can about assure you, you're going to be plus or minus a touchdown. So either 60-40, 40-60, however you want to look at it. And that's where I think a lot of it comes down to that three-game stretch. I mean, starting with UCLA. And that's where the three-game stretch that UCLA has before Minnesota, you can make the argument, and I wouldn't disagree with you, that it is the toughest three-game schedule you'll see in the country. When Minnesota gets to travel to the Rose Bowl, which I'll tell you, there is going to be tens of thousands of Gopher fans there because they haven't been there in essentially 40, 50 years, and they're excited to go to Pasadena.
And outnumber the UCLA fans there.
Yeah. The three games UCLA has, I believe they're on the road in Baton Rouge. You get to play Oregon at home. Oh, lucky you. And then the week before Minnesota comes to town, you get to travel to Penn State.
Yep.
And I don't know if that's going to be the whiteout game. Has that been announced
yet? It's supposed to be. I don't think it's been official, but it's supposed to be.
So you get a white. I mean, that's a daunting. My question is, where's UCLA going to be at mentally, physically before Minnesota comes to town?
Because they're in Los Angeles.
Oh, you're coach, yeah, David.
It's 100% the question for UCLA this season is, where are they mentally after?
Right.
Because they're going to lose three straight. I mean, it's almost a lock at this point. They're going to lose to LSU. They're going to lose to Oregon. They're going to lose to Penn State. If they're still mentally engaged, then those next four or so, those are winnable games. But if they if they're just beaten up and done, I mean, they could go 2-10. There's no way of knowing. So I think Minnesota, to your point, catching UCLA on the road at the right time.
Yeah,
exactly. Or even the USC game when Ryan gets to come to town, which and it'll be nice in early October in Minnesota. October. I want you to know that it'll be in the 70s. I feel pretty confident in saying that. But I mean, that'll be a sold out game. It's how does Minnesota do in those eight games that are plus or minus a touchdown? They could be anywhere from 4-8 to 8-4. Somewhere in between is obviously the most likely outcome. I'll tell you, it surprised me a little bit to see when the offseason opened that they were among the lowest, tied for the lowest with a win total of 4.5. To me, I'm sure you've had a lot of people come on and say this, what is going to happen in the trenches? I mean, Minnesota feels like they're pretty good up front. They return a lot of starters. And especially as the season gets going, I'm going to be very curious to see where teams like USC and UCLA can match up in the trenches compared to some of these Big Ten teams. Now, obviously, if you can just explosive the heck out of everybody, it's going to be a lot tougher for some of these Big Ten West offenses, the way that they're constructed, to come back on that. But if they get into a ground and pound matchup, it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, two of my best friends from college are from Minnesota. So I'm going to go there day early October and hang out. Yeah, I haven't been for a while, but we used to go lakes in the summer and my buddy from college, we'd go. I think I went there for Thanksgiving once, and his brother had a bunch of deer they just shot in the garage and stuff. And so we were like, wake up hungover one morning, they're like, basically chopping up a deer in the kitchen. I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. But yeah, I'm looking forward to going back for that one. But it's early October, so it won't be too terrible. We had Michigan on earlier. They won the national championship. No listener questions for Zach, but we do have one for you, Ryan, from Colt. David Woods has labeled this team ass for the year. What would the season need to look like in order to not be a quote ass this season?
Point of order, really quick. I'm not sure that's true.
It probably
is. But I'm 80% sure that's true. However, the things I say, do they have any meaning after they have left my mouth? No, absolutely not. They're beautiful little birds that I let fly, and then I don't recall them.
So you're saying Minnesota's ass is what?
That's what
I believe. At some point, I may have lumped them in the group of teams. I won't say ass. I've lumped them in the group of teams that have very good defenses, as Minnesota did last year. And this includes a group of Nebraska, Minnesota, Rutgers, Wisconsin to a certain extent, and Iowa as the pinnacle that have great defense and had truly abominable offense. And I've basically, in the context of UCLA season and the Pac-12 teams in general, what breaks first, good offense or great defense? And that being kind of the frame of reference for this season. But anyway, to answer his question, what would the season need to look like in order to not be ass this year?
Well, I would tell you, Minnesota's defense was pretty bad last year. They were hemorrhaged rushing yards. They're one of the worst teams in run defense, hemorrhaged explosive plays. They had been good. They weren't last year, which is part of why they were 5-7. If they were asked this year, I would tell you they went 4-8. And what happened? I would tell you they had an injury at quarterback, which means you're going to be starting a true freshman in the Big Ten, which Godspeed. And then defensively, you didn't get any better with a brand new offensive defensive coordinator in Corey Heatherman, who comes over from Rutgers. Minnesota returns a lot of starters. I think the expectation for me is they make a bowl game. I think that's a good season for them. They'd outperform Vegas expectations. But if they're truly bad and it's a bad year, you're 4-8. You can't stop the run. You have no passing game to speak of whatsoever. You can't generate an explosive play on offense, and you continue to hemorrhage them defensively. So a bad year for them, I would say 4-8.
All right. Well, Sid, you're going to get used to David saying stuff like that. He does that a lot.
Well, I'm here for it. Trust me.
Yeah.
I mean, I cover UCLA. I'm willing to take everything as well.
No, I mean, yeah.
I'm in LA, and so is UCLA, and so is Deshaun Foster, yeah, along with USC.
Yeah.
I appreciate this. He's at least embracing it with the T-shirt I think he had on yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's the only... it's the only way to operate, right? You gotta, if you do something really embarrassing, you gotta either lean into it or hope everyone forgets it. And obviously not anyone's forgetting it. I was on Nebraska radio the other day and they asked me about it. I think it was like the second question they asked.
It wasn't first?
No, it wasn't first, but it was number two.
Nice. Well, good stuff. Looking forward. Yeah, both of our guests today, USC is going to be on the road. I've been to Minnesota, but I've never seen a game there, so that'll be fun. And like Ryan said, that'll be a sold out one. That'll be cool. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious, like what you said, Ryan, you know, how many thousands of fans and tens of thousands of fans are going to come out to the Rose Bowl, because I don't know if you know this, but Rose Bowl attendance hasn't been all that great for the Bruins.
I've heard of it. What do you mean?
Yeah. And strange. It might go up a lot, so that's good. But yeah, I think there could be a lot. I'm curious, even in the Coliseum too, just like how many Big Ten fans are going to be, because there's so many people that live here that, you know, moved here from Midwestern states and stuff. It's just, you know, it's a transplant kind of area.
All right. Yeah. For calling Minnesota ass, I'm going to give Minnesota fans a favor here. You might typically buy your ticket allotment through the university. That might be your plan of action. However, I want to give you some advice. UCLA, the Rose Bowl, not a typical road stadium that you're used to dealing with, i.e., the fans won't be there. So if you go on StubHub, you're likely to get a significantly better deal than you typically would relative to the allotment from the university. So just a strong recommendation, go to the secondary market. You'll be very pleased with the prices and probably the seats you get.
I'm going to certainly pass that along, let me tell you, because I'm telling you, Minnesota is an older fan base. They are. And a lot of the boomer generation is going to be hitting the Rose Bowl. They all thought that they were going to be getting there consistently in the Rose Bowl era back in the 60s and 70s. It's been a long time. I don't know if you know this. It's 2024. A lot of these 60, 70, and 80-year-olds have been waiting a long time to go. They have sold out a lot of planes out of MSP, which you guys will find out, one of the best airports in the country compared to what you have. Because I hear you're in a place called L.A.
Yes. We're in L.A.
Okay. MSP, I think you're going to enjoy quite a bit. So I'm excited. I think the novelty of it as well. I can't tell you. I'm sad you guys never got to go to Ryan Field, where there was about 4,000 people there, no matter if it was September, October, or November. Or Champaign, Illinois is also on the bucket list, I'm sure, for you guys.
Yes.
Beautiful going out Champaign. To L.A. or Eugene or Seattle, I'm going to enjoy going there, opposed to, say, I don't know, West Lafayette more often.
Speaking of Rose Bowls, just to give you some context, UCLA, they play in LA. We're all agree on that. And they play at the Rose Bowl. Like, they play at the Rose Bowl. They don't play in the Rose Bowl. Would you like to guess when last time UCLA won a Rose Bowl? Anyone?
I think you were born that year.
I was 1.5 months old. I'm now an old man of between 38 and 70. That's their home stadium. They don't play in it, though. They play at it.
if it makes you feel any better, I am a 1992 baby, not to make you feel old or anything. The last time a Minnesota sports team got to a championship game, I'm just saying got to the championship game, whether in any of
the
four pro sports teams, was October of 1991. I turned 32 in a couple of days. I haven't even ever in my lifetime just seen someone get to the championship game, and there are four pro sports teams in town. I mean, it is truly, it has been for quite some time, Loserville, USA, in the pro sports market. So it's a tough time to be a Minnesota fan.
Wait, with the Stars, didn't they played like Pittsburgh in like the early 90s for a cup, right? Or no? Was that?
I think they had already moved to Dallas by that point.
Oh, is it? Okay. Is that, I know, because my buddy that was the big Minnesota guy, that was one of my best friends, we always would tease him like, yeah, Minnesota traded away all of their first round picks forever for Herschel Walker to the Cowboys. Plus they gave them the Stars. So it was like, we give you a hockey team and all we got is Herschel Walker. And that was one of the worst trades ever. And then Dallas goes on to win a bunch of Super Bowls. I don't want to bring up bad memories. You weren't born yet. So
from one Ryan to another, I do truly appreciate that.
Well, we've got some combined fan base trauma. So here's what I think we should do.
Okay.
Minnesota fans, UCLA fans who are listening, everyone just take some profound, truly profound hallucinogens heading into that game and just put yourself in the mindset that this is the Rose Bowl. You are at the Rose Bowl and it is the Rose Bowl. It just happens to be taking place in October. We'll all just kind of have that fever dream together.
Did I also hear you just say, if you want to procure those certain hallucinogens, to hit you up on Twitter at David Woods to make sure that you can get a fair rate on those as well?
I think you did hear that. Yeah.
West Texas Mike says, I remember those Twins of the 80s, if it makes you feel any better. And he also said, the Stars are mine now. So he's down there. Sorry.
It's brutal being a fan out here. I'm telling you, it's just, even the Vikings this year, they're going to be horrible. The Twins were the last team to make a trade at the deadline because their ownership doesn't want to spend any money. The Timberwolves finally gave us some hope. They get to the Western Conference Finals and then they get obliterated. I mean, I'm telling you, I would just love to have this market. There are a lot of hungry sports fans in this market for success. And that's where, if the Gophers could find consistent success, this is a football town and they would rally around this team. But just to see some team get consistent success in this market, I hope I see it at some point in my lifetime.
Well, I mean, in the NBA, I mean, they're a very exciting team. Like, that's a lot of fun. Like, that's something that's very, very watchable. Like, that's good. And
they went through a 15-year stretch from Kevin Garnett to Anthony Edwards, where if you looked at the team, you wouldn't be able to name a single player not named your guy Kevin Love.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, don't you put that filth on my guy Kevin Love.
Or what do you mean, taking multiple point guards in the first 7 picks and passing on some guy named Steph Curry for Ricky Rubio? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many stories in this market. I can't wait to continue to tell you guys about it.
Nice. Well, Ryan,
we should just add a segment that's Minnesota sports story time.
It'd be good. We got to give you some applause here. Right. We really appreciate you coming on late notice and everything. And I hate you for winning my league every year. I've only been in there 1 year, but you keep winning it apparently. And you get everyone's picks.
If you want to trade me your first round picks, Ryan, I'll exchange some of that USC Trojan success, or maybe some of that USC NIL money that I've seen them throw around like it's just willy-nilly.
Yeah, I haven't had a first round pick yet. I still didn't get one this year. So, but yeah, I somehow the number 2 pick in the draft, or 3 or whatever it was, Stroud, fell all the way to like late second round. So I got him. So at least I got one like nice pick, but we'll see. I've never done a dynasty one before, so this has been kind of fun to see. But congrats on your second consecutive win. Hopefully it's not going to be 3, but we'll see. We'll both get to see you, so it'll be good. We'll see you in the press box. Maybe I'll come out to the Rose Bowl for the Minnesota game.
You should come out to the Rose Bowl. It will be the Rose Bowl for those of us who procure certain items before the game.
Yeah.
Before I leave, I have to ask you two, because you're in some town I hear is called L.A. along with UCLA.
We are in L.A.
Do you consider Pasadena part of L.A. or no?
No.
I don't get into too many distinctions about the general area. I would say it's not a place that I would call L.A. like when I'm generalizing, but there are lots of places. Like, I live in the city of El Segundo, but when I'm talking to somebody outside of Los Angeles, I say
I'm from LA.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be obnoxious, but I think Pasadena is distinct enough and probably known enough that you could probably just call it Pasadena is where I stand on it.
Yeah, it's a little further, like, it's still LA County, but it's kind of like more outskirtsy. And it's sort of, yeah, like Dave said, sort of its own area. But the problem is people come here and they'll be like, and I've definitely talked to people that were like, yeah, I'm staying in Newport Beach. The Rose Bowl. I'm like, that's like a helicopter ride. Like, you can't even like
enjoy your trek.
Or they're like, I'm going to stay in downtown LA. Where I'm like, no, that's not where everything happens. Like, you don't want to go there. Like, you have to, the geography is just so spread out that Pasadena is very, very different. Like,
yeah, let me give that recommendation actually as well. For Minnesota fans traveling, you have to pick the LA experience you want. If you want convenience for the game, stay in or around Pasadena, because Saturday traffic in Los Angeles, especially in the afternoon or evening, can be terrible. Sometimes it's fine. Most of the time it's terrible. So stay proximate to Pasadena.
But you don't want to do that because it sucks there.
It's not great. But if your priority is the game, do that. But if your priority is sightseeing and all that kind of stuff, maybe since you're doing travel anyway, stay a couple of days in like West LA, stay a couple of days, you know, down in the South Bay if you want to, but stay the night before in Pasadena.
Okay.
Because then you can do like Old Town Pasadena, which is fine for exactly one night, and then go to the Rose Bowl and then get out of there. And fly into Burbank if you can.
Okay. I'm staying in Old Town Pasadena, so glad to know that my three-night trek there is going to be absolutely riveting.
One night is really good, and then it's Old Town Pasadena.
You can do other stuff.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. It's totally fine.
Okay. But people go there like, oh, Pasadena. I'm like, that's not the center of the universe. Like, there's the Rose Bowl is there. And it's like, there's some cool stuff.
Yeah.
But
and a lot of get off my lawn residents in the area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll fit in with some of the age demographic that's going to be going on out there from at least my fan base.
Great point. Actually, they might actually really take to Pasadena. They might settle there.
This is pretty awesome. So as far as our brand goes as a show, like, you know, we did 7 or 8 years as a Pac-12 podcast of champions. And now, of course, we're the foremost authority talking Big Ten football. But Ryan, you fit in the best because there's just a lot of talk about not football going on. Like, we do that in spades. Like, that's what we do. So,
and fan base anguish. We like that a lot. You know, I'll just take you behind the curtain. We're a little uncomfortable talking to Michigan and Ohio State. Far too much success. Way too much. We got to talk too much football. But you, talking to Illinois, talking to Indiana, talking to Rutgers, that's our speed. We want to do that more.
Yeah.
Well, you'll start to learn, especially among the Big Ten West guys. I mean, I think you've had Jeremy Warner on already. That man loves himself a Schmedium polo. If you couldn't tell, that man hits the gym quite a bit. I think he likes to tell all of us that he's got the biggest biceps in the Big Ten. Now, I'm a bigger guy, 6'4", 240 pounds. I mean, I lift a little bit. But trust me, I don't walk around in a Schmedium. I know what my strength is, and that's an extra large. All right?
See, this is fitting in very well. We got some bad advice in the chat. Dave Young says, just take the train from downtown. You guys forgot transit exists. Okay, so
nobody in Los Angeles takes the train.
No one takes the train. You get stabbed or shot. Like, they literally, city council people are saying, like, I will not take it.
Not for that reason, but nobody takes the train.
But that's one of the reasons you don't take the train. But then you're like, from downtown. Why are you downtown? You're not going to be downtown. You have to, like, be in a very specific spot going to another very specific
downtown
spot.
Downtown had a resurgence for about 10 years, and it's on the downside of that now. Don't go to downtown. You can go to LA Live, I guess. Is that still a thing? Do people still go there?
There's some cool like bars and stuff like downtown, but not like it's not a destination. Like, the center of Los Angeles is not downtown Los Angeles.
Famous.
Like, you can go to Santa Monica or Beverly Hills or like Manhattan Beach or down in Newport, wherever you want to do, but don't do like downtown LA. Like, no, that's not a destination. So the fact that you could take a train from downtown to Pasadena means nothing because you don't want to be in either one of
you
those
can take a train from LAX all the way to downtown Pasadena.
The train doesn't go to LAX.
Well, from LAX adjacent.
Yes. Right. That's how stupid we are. Like,
we're working on it. It's only been like a year and a half, 2 years of trying to build the stupid
thing. You guys are like an old married couple. Nobody's ever told you that before.
Yeah, it's a lot. But like, we only approve the, like, so like 4 years from now, it'll be better if Minnesota gets to come out for like USC or UCLA, because we get the Olympics coming and then we fix everything for that. So we're, there's going to be a people mover at the airport at LAX. There'll be like the train can go there. But right now, none of that stuff happens.
It's a disaster flying to LAX.
They were the reincarnation of them, just putting some Flex Seal over whatever the Band-Aid is for LA. Yeah, I hope Minnesota goes back out to LA in 26 or 27. Just so I can see it back up.
It'll be better. Yeah, it'll definitely be, like, the reason that LAX has an upper and lower for arrivals and departures, that was 1984. So they fixed it for that Olympics, and then they've done nothing for, you know, 40
years. No, they've just consistently made it worse with new policies for how you pick up and drop off.
Good stuff.
Can't wait.
This has been a pleasure.
You've been awesome, Ryan. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. And we'll see you this year. Thanks again for coming on, man.
All right. See you guys in October.
All right. Appreciate it, Ryan. We'll see ya. What great stuff there.
Tremendous stuff.
He fit right in to our little dog and pony show.
Pure fit. Hand in glove.
Did he want to talk about Minnesota football? Not really.
No. We talked about quarterback. That's all we needed. We talked some PJ Fleck. Yeah.
And just kind of moved on from there. But that was good. No, he's good stuff. He is very good in our Dynasty Football League, but.
Why am I not in the Dynasty Football League?
I just got invited last year.
Is it NFL? Is that what you're talking
about? It's NFL,
yeah. Oh, that's stupid. I don't want to do that.
It's NFL. Yeah, that's what we do.
I'm in a Dynasty for NCAA 25 or CFB 25, whatever stupid thing they're calling the video game.
Did you play it for 8 hours and then just throw it away? Or
no, I've played more than that.
Okay, so you were wrong.
Yeah. Definitely wrong. My kids are back east visiting their grandparents right now, so that helps afford me time. You know,
that's nice.
Time is important. So I've been playing quite a bit. I'm bad. I've gotten a lot worse with age. Video games, you don't get better with age. You get much.
I used to be very good, like as a teen and stuff, and then.
Yeah. And because of that, I don't know if my assessment is correct, but here is my assessment of the video game.
Okay.
Even counting in the fact that I'm a lot worse, the game is insanely hard. Like when you try to play at the difficulty of Heisman, which is what I used to play when I used to play this stuff consistently.
So you tried to go back to that.
I tried to do that. And I swear to God, I threw on like my first 15 throws, I threw like 11 interceptions. I could not. And it's like the DBs are programmed to like jump 6 feet in the air, catch everything, and your wide receivers catch nothing if it's contested. And even on the level down, which I played when I sucked, when I was learning how to play, still threw a ton of interceptions. I'm in a user dynasty that's from Bro. Like I just signed up for it.
Is that the website you work for?
I work for there. It's in LA. I played All American, and I threw against Ohio State. I threw 10 interceptions in the game, and I turned it over 12 times. But the other guy, who was really good, you know what he did? He turned it over 5 times himself.
So it's hard.
It was
him
17 17 turnovers in that game, and so I just think the game. So my feel for it is that it was created in such a way that like. Basic gameplay things kind of fell by the wayside in favor of some like, oh, I can do this. I can shift my line this way, and I can do like all these kind of crazy line shifts and all this like technical stuff that's adding complexity. But they kind of lost the like, this is supposed to be fun, not make you want to throw your controller through a window. So hopefully they can patch that a little bit.
Okay. But can you just play a lower level? Like,
yeah, but that's cowardice. You don't want to do that.
Well, you want to make it like playable.
No, I figured out how to make it playable, and it's the tried and true that it's always been, which is go 4 wide and run the ball.
Oh, so that works.
Yeah, if you go 4 wide and run the ball, like every other one, you'll get like a 5 or 6 yard run.
Okay.
Fine. Yeah. But it's boring if you do that. Like, it's not as fun.
You'd like to be able to throw the ball.
Yeah, and then the routes that work are almost always, it's, you know, over the middle, slanting over the middle in some way.
Sluggos were always good, right?
Yeah, well, it's just, that'll be a completion, you know, again, one out of every 2 times. But the pass rush is insane. Like, your tackles, you have to stay in the pocket because your tackles will never actually handle the defensive ends.
Okay.
It's
anyway, I'm just old man ranting about this because I'm bad, but I do think it's much harder than it used to be.
All right.
But it also might be because I'm old and bad.
Could be that too.
Yeah.
We didn't go over at the top of the show, but just let everyone know, you can still email us. We got some emails. Big10cast@gmail.com, spelled out T-E-N. And you can call or text us at 424-532-0678 if you want to leave us a voicemail or send us a text. We do have a voicemail I'm going to play. You're going to be excited. Twitter is at B1G Podcast. And you can go to our YouTube show. We're doing this live on YouTube as well. If you go to B1GPodcast.com, it will pull up our YouTube show. So you can go check that out. We're getting close to 2,000 subscribers. So please like and subscribe over there. We appreciate that. And if you do have the Apple Podcasting app, you can follow us there and rate us with a 5-star rating and leave us some sort of review. That's great. Spotify, you can do the same thing as far as the ratings go. Do we have any new – I know we just did a show on Saturday, but any new reviews, David?
No, I don't think any of these are new.
Okay. I do have an exciting voicemail that I haven't listened to yet, but I read the beginning of the transcript.
And I told you all you needed.
And I was like, holy shit. We are back, baby. Here we go. Hope you guys enjoy it.
Hello, Ryan. Hello, Sith Lord Dave. That's right. It's me. This resident Rutgers fan. It's good to be back. I heard some listener who calls himself Scott that I'd be easily replaced. Well, Scott, did they easily replace Ted Bundy? Huh? Did they easily replace Rob Thomas and Matchbox 20? Huh? It's 3 a.m. and you must be lonely, Scott. It's 3 a.m. you must be lonely. That's right. I'm not easily replaced. And you might think, hey, I thought this guy was a West Coast guy. I thought he was a Stanford fan. Well, obviously I did my best work, my graduate level work in the Bay Area back in the 70s and 80s. But I did my undergrad work in the great state of New Jersey. Where else are you going to learn how to dispose of, how to manage waste really, really well? New Jersey, baby. That's right. And, I just have one question, Dave. Where do you get off with this smug, polite, not even taking a single swipe at any of the fan bases in your new conference during this first round of podcasting? Huh? The politeness, the total lack of just snarky sarcasm, if you will. It was disgusting. It disgusts me. Okay? My beloved Scarlet Knights aren't even worth snark at this point. But I'll tell you one thing. Coach Ciano has got our boys ready to go. Not only that, but the scheduling is elite this year. Mark it here. Confident quarterback play, Scarlet Knights win 10 games. Just subpar but not horrible quarterback play, we win 8 games. We'll be in a bowl. Will you, Dave? Will the Bruins, Dave? What say ye, Ryan? Are you bowling this year? Keep it mediocre, boys.
Amazing.
For those of you who haven't yet heard, that was the Zodiac Killer who calls in to our podcast.
He doesn't admit he's the Zodiac Killer.
But we all know.
Do you know he was unapprehended?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's why he's free.
I didn't know he was from New Jersey, though.
The actual Zodiac Killer?
Is he really? Because he killed a whole bunch of people in Northern California.
Well, if he's unapprehended and we don't know who he is. Can we say whether he was from New Jersey or not?
Oh, yes. I guess we wouldn't know.
He asked me a question, which I need to address. Why have I not been talking mad shit about all of the Big Ten teams?
You did call Minnesota ass.
I did call Minnesota ass.
But you didn't say it to his face. We had to have
I've been on my better behavior through these previews. Why? Because we are introducing ourselves for the first time ever to many of these fan bases and these people. Like, I had never spoken to Ryan today. Not you, Ryan. I've spoken to you a few times. But the other Ryan, I'd never spoken to Zach before. So, you know, I can be abrasive. But,
no.
You know, on first meeting, am I going to be abrasive? Only 50, 60% of the time. So, yeah, that's sort of where I've been going on this, but never fear. We're going to get into the season and it's just going to be me talking to Ryan and, yeah, we're going to be talking some mad shit about Big Ten.
At least you will. All right. Well, that was an amazing call. Like that, that made my whole day.
That was great. Did you see, per his question about UCLA, did you see that UCLA's win total for the year dropped after Deshaun Foster had his flub at Media Day?
I did not see that.
It went down by half a win or maybe a full win to 4.5 at some spots now.
They're like, this is the guy leading.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's yeah, very cool. All right. We got other questions. We have other questions.
I think...
is it Coach West, Longevity?
West Texas Mike.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, I got it.
He said, speaking of public speaking, I thought you two were going to reprise your Pac-12 eulogies for the masses. West Texas Mike.
This is a great, great thing because those eulogies we did at the No Truck Stops RIP and our little shindig at the Pac-12 tournament.
Yes.
Where I can't speak for you. But I haven't been that hungover since like shortly after college. Like I would say probably like 2009 was maybe the most hungover I've ever been prior to that. But that was the worst I've felt in a morning in forever. And so I think I just mumbled something into the mic and then handed it to you.
Yeah, you were awful.
Yeah. But I'd intended to like write a little thing and do a little thing, but that didn't happen because instead we just got blind drunk the night before.
Mm. That's never happened.
And then we're non-functional the next morning. But we did somehow eat at a buffet.
That was rough.
A lot of meat.
That was Matthew too. Like another our Stanford fan, who maybe he likes Rutgers now. That was yummy. But yes, was not feeling super perky that day. But I still brought it on the speech. I like having a microphone in my hand, you know?
Yeah, LFG. I have a microphone and you don't, so you will listen to every goddamn word I have to say.
LFG says drop to 4.5 wins.
Yeah,
yeah, that makes sense. All right, what else we got next?
You've got, or I've got Frank in Sacramento. It's not really as expensive to field a bunch of athletes as we are told. If it costs $70,000 a year to go to USC and you have 1,000 athletes on scholarship, it costs $70 million to finance those athletes. But that's BS. You don't turn away 1,000 tuition-paying students to make room for those 1,000 athletes. The university may bill the athletic department for the spots, but that's just accounting. But they really just make the classes bigger so those costs get absorbed, Frank in Sacramento. Frank, you're totally right in a general like vacuum sense. The problem is when you're removing walk-on spots and replacing them with scholarship players, what you are actually in fact doing is taking away a student who is very – in reality, paying money to the university and replacing them with somebody who, at best, the university is not getting any money from, but in many instances, the university is paying more money for that student than they would to support normal Joe student who's doing their regular academics because there's a lot of athletic support that goes into a scholarship that's added cost.
Yeah, it's more than so. It's like a six-figure thing per athlete, I think.
There's a lot of performance stuff. There's all the like associated with staff. I mean, you're going to need more trainers. If you have 105 versus 85, you need more trainers because there's 20 more guys to take care of.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of added costs, but the very simple one is you're taking away a walk-on who pays and replacing him with somebody who doesn't pay at the best. Like the best way is like you're taking away $70,000. No university is going to do that. I really don't think anyone's going to 105.
Some might.
I mean, I'd be stunned. Think about all these universities. And second, think about what a scholarship player demands. Like if you're carrying 105 scholarships, how many of those guys are asking for NIL?
All of them, yeah.
So you got to come up with booster funds to fund those guys because now they're coming to your school. And then on top of that, what's your churn every year? Because the churn on 85 is insane for some schools. They're having 30 transfers out a year. You add 20 more to that? I mean, yeah. You might have 50 guys leaving every cycle, which means you have to recruit 50 more guys. Do you know how many coaches are going to want to do that?
Chip Kelly.
Fucking zero. Nobody wants to do that. Not even Nick Saban at his most psychotic wants to recruit 50 guys a year.
I think so. The football aspect of it, so we don't know how it's all going to work out. I agree with you. I mean, just talking to people, it's going to be tough for most athletic departments to fund that. And maybe I think in the question he was saying that they would just admit more students, so you admit another one, but you know, there's costs associated with
that. I mean, a lot of schools are nearly at capacity too.
Yeah, so that's a problem. But I would say with NIL and stuff, and especially some of the way, you know, I think the 105 is actually going to be a smaller roster for a lot of people. And I don't know if a lot of schools are going to need to get much more than 85 guys on scholarship. And you could have some partial ones. That third string punter, maybe he's on like a 25% one.
Yeah.
So I don't think you need to go full bore 105 through. But we might see in the SEC, this is the way college athletics has been set up, is like there was like limits that you would hit the ceiling pretty easily. These scholarship additions, it's like the ceiling's unattainable. You can't do it. Like, is someone going to add 50 tumbling scholarships or whatever it was? The SEC might separate themselves in the baseball world, because people I've talked to seem to think that like Mississippi State's going to go from 11 and a half baseball scholarships to 34. I don't think USC is going to do anything close to that. They might only add a few scholarships, and you know, but what if the whole SEC decides we're just going to fully fund baseball, which means you're going to have 30 more scholarships like somewhere else, or 20 something, you know, in a women's sport. I don't know how you're going to do it, but this might be a bigger separator between the haves and the have nots, that some people really care about it, so they're going to sink a lot of resources into it. And most schools will be like, we can't do this. They're not even going to compete.
Yeah. The thing I can't imagine is doing it in smaller sports that don't bring in a lot of revenue. And I mean, I know SEC baseball is much more of a revenue generator than Pac-12 baseball was. But even then, is it enough of a revenue generator to take away what was 21.3 full payments of tuition every year? Like, is it enough to do that? Is it enough to justify
and
that?
And you have to add women's sports to match that.
Yeah, you've got to match it at some level depending on participation rates because of Title IX. So, I mean, I think a lot of athletic departments might talk a good game. A lot of coaches might talk a good game. But this is a decision that's going to be made at the high university level at every single one of these schools. And it's hard to imagine, just knowing the way a lot of these bureaucracies operate, somebody being willing to just take the hit on their budget, on their line items, for what's going to be a massive revenue drop if you go to max in any of these things. Now, I'm not talking maybe a few scholarships. Maybe, you know, baseball goes to 15 or 16 instead of the whatever it is, 11.7 that it is right now. Maybe water polo goes to 6 instead of 4 or whatever it is. But it's hard to imagine football going too high above 85 when you factor in that NFL rosters handle it at 53. 85 is already a lot. Like 85, there was talk not that long ago of reducing the number of scholarships needed in college football. Going up to 105, I think it's there's the only reason to do it is to stockpile talent. And, you know, some schools that they're like absolute greediest might want to do that, but players aren't going to want that. Like coaches aren't going to want to do that. And the universities aren't going to want it. I think there's a lot of headwinds for even trying to add much more than 5. I think like teams might get to 90. They might go to 95 if they've got, you know, a situation where they're like this year, UCLA true scholarship players probably has 88, but they're taking care of a few with NIL. So you might see stuff like that, but it's just, I'm just having a hard time getting my mind around it because of the money involved. Yeah. Like, it's just, you're taking money away from academics, from bureaucrats who are not going to, and I'm not saying from the actual learning, I'm saying from the academics, the people in charge. And they're not going to want to do that in favor of baseball or gymnastics or even football.
I think the sports people you're talking to, especially from the SEC world, feel like they're going to be fully funding a lot of this stuff. But you're right. It could be, it's the university president's like, we're not doing that. Like, you know, figure out another way. So I think there might be some of that. But that's why it's all going to be interesting, because we don't know which schools are going to do what. Like, some school might just say, we're putting all our resources into like women's softball and we're going to like fund that. And we're not going to fund the other stuff. So we're going to be a power in that. But we can't try to do everything, because with all these high limits, you might have to pick and choose which sports you're good at.
I guess not to like go counterfactual, but if they were going to do it, they would have already done it, because NIL, the rules have been such that you could have taken care of this in NIL before. Like, you could have gone to 105 scholarship players in reality, de facto scholarship, and done it with NIL funds if you wanted to. I mean, privately funding 20 students is what? A little under $1 million at most universities if you get in state. And if not, it's a little over $1 million. If they were going to do that, they would have already done it. I don't think there's this huge incentive to grow to 105. Like, I don't. When you get to 85, what you end up with is a huge amount of your scholarship players who don't play and end up transferring after a single year.
Yeah.
What you're going to end up with.
It doesn't get better with 105.
No, it doesn't get any better with 105. It gets a whole lot worse. And then you're getting, with 105, you end up with bringing in more transfers who then push your freshmen further down the depth chart. And then those freshmen who may have talent, who might have otherwise stayed in your program, they bounce. And so you're creating this. I think you end up creating greater churn because of the numbers. Guys want to play.
Yeah.
I mean, they want to play more than they want to make whatever $50,000 as the like 80th scholarship on your team.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. I got a show at 2. So we got to like, I guess I need a few minutes to get ready for that. We got Tom in the Cayman Islands, very excited for the season. He says, "Hi, Ryan and David. I wanted to say how excited I am for this upcoming season for both my alma mater, Syracuse, and USC. More so than any other season, this finally feels like a natural fit with Syracuse having their new conference rivals in Stanford and Cal. Meanwhile, USC has its new conference rivals in Rutgers and Penn State. I mean, what could make more sense than flying 8 hours across the country with a connection in Detroit for a weekend in the Bay Area? I'm sure Syracuse fans will be flocking to those games. Perhaps we can call it, quote, the Weekender or something original like that. And of course, what could possibly be better than an 11-hour, two-connection flight to the bustling State College Regional Airport from LAX? But it's not all sunshine and roses. I've been perturbed by the changes that have occurred these last couple of episodes of the POC. Ever since the rebrand, there's been far too much talk of college football and the nuances behind other Big Ten programs. I hope this doesn't become a regular occurrence. Thanks, Tom and the Caymans."
We're trying to get it all out of our system before the season.
We got a lot of off-topic stuff today, so
yeah,
we were off track quite a bit.
We were doing our best with Minnesota, because look, Minnesota, they don't really want to talk about their football program. Do we want to talk about ours? Probably not. So we've got a lot of common interests. We can have conversations about flight plans, about logistics of travel in Los Angeles. We made the same joke about Deshaun Foster 3 times in that one segment.
That's true.
Yeah. Those are called callbacks. All right. This is from Jake from What's Brewing.
Oh.
Purposeful planning or permanent hearing loss? Hey, fellas. Just a technical question for you. Were you purposely raising and lowering your guest volume last week, or was that just the result of the permanent hearing damage I suffered from the first 4 seconds of the ad tag on the front of last week's POC and Brocast? Of course, I love you both to death, but you will be hearing from my legal team. Really, though, I'm glad you're keeping the band together. You're a couple of great things that are great together. What a nice thing to say.
Thanks, Jake.
So there's been an ad service issue from 247's end that because we're bad at quality control, neither of us listened to the show after we put it up. And so it was only when it was brought to my attention that I listened to it. And we've been subjecting people to this horrifying noise. I'm going to recreate it if you want to put your hands over your ears for just a second. It sounds like this. For about 7 seconds, and then it goes away. It's horrible. It's due to, just technically letting you know, somebody in our ads team accidentally uploading an ad as a WAV file when it should be an MP3. And for some reason, that creates literally the worst noise you would want to hear on a podcast, which I recreated for you just now. We don't have a solution for it yet. So Ryan's going to put ads on this sucker. And then my quality control for you is that one of us will listen to it within the next, I don't know, day and a half, to see if that happened again. And if it did, we may or may not remember to take the ads off the show. Thank you.
Yes. That's the plan.
Yeah.
But yeah, we appreciate that. And I'm trying to, someone was complaining about the audio levels on the YouTube, And so when we get the remote guests, for whatever reason, they end up being like louder than us. So I've tried to turn us up, try to turn them down a little bit. Hopefully, if you're watching on YouTube, that the audio levels will be better. But for the podcast, I do run it through a bunch of filters and stuff. I edit it. So we try to make the levels even for everybody. So the podcast should sound a lot closer. But the podcast is where you get that terrible ad, and that might have screwed some things up too.
Would you like me to recreate the noise again?
No, I would definitely not like you to do that. We got one last text message. This is, I don't know who it's from. It says, guys, just got to say no thank you to the new audio title card. Keep the now in more homes. It'll be funny till the day we die.
Should we have just gone with forever in more homes than the Pac-12 network?
Could have done that.
That would have been kind of good.
We still can.
Did we screw up? Do we have to get Roger Lodge to record that now?
He would do it.
Vote on it. Is that a better tagline than what's our current one? From the heart of Big Ten
country.
That's pretty good too. Should we do both? From the heart of Big Ten country and forever in more homes than the Pac-12 network.
Maybe, yeah. I have to pay Roger overtime for the extra, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's okay.
He's a volunteer. He does it for free. All right. Well, let's anything else?
Anything else? No.
What's kind of on topic because there was that Michigan stuff news has kind of come out. But
did you ever watch For All Mankind?
I did not.
The Apple TV show about space race?
No.
You should watch it. I think you'd like it.
I think I would like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I just watched the fourth season, fifth season, whatever just came out. It's it's divergent. So it's what if the Russians landed on the moon first before the U.S. and how that would have inspired the U.S. to then go bigger and bigger and bigger with space stuff.
Yeah.
And then the Russians to go bigger and bigger and bigger with space stuff. And then so we're now in a season where they're on Mars trying to do some stuff.
Oh, wow.
But it starts literally with the space race, and it's like it carries forward across like it's now four decades.
So is that kind of like the Man in the High Castle thing where like –
Yeah, it's like alternate history.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like 2003 in this new season, and they're on Mars. Al Gore is president, and they're trying to – essentially capture an asteroid that's covered in iridium so they can, have eternal wealth on Earth. And then it's like competition, though. It's fun.
Okay.
Yeah. You should check it out.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. It gets more sci-fi as it goes on. Beginning, though, very just like, oh, they're trying to go to the moon. And then they're trying to build a space station on the moon. And they're trying to, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of like alternate history things. It's kind of fun.
Do you have Apple TV? Do you have Apple Plus?
I believe so, yeah.
Whatever it is called. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you do, you should watch it. Watch episode one today. See if you like it.
Maybe I'll do it. Okay.
Do it. For All Mankind.
USC had their media day yesterday. Did UCLA have one?
UCLA doesn't have one anymore. A football media day. They just do the Big Ten one and then.
Okay.
But we got Deshaun Foster yesterday, but it was just first practice.
Okay. USC's first practice is tomorrow. Yeah. And then we got to talk to like 50 players yesterday. It was crazy. There was like a lot of crap going on. So I got to talk to Connor about that.
A lot of content.
And we don't get to talk to players until like Wednesday. So I guess we can use all those interviews kind of going forward. So keep creating the content. And by the way, 60% off. Network-wide.
You heard from Michigan. You heard from Minnesota today. You can sign up for 60% off there. You can sign up for 60% off us. All of our Big Ten compatriots, all of our former Pac-12 compatriots. 247 does a great job covering all of these teams. They all do a better job than we do. And we do a pretty good job. Yeah. So sign up now, 60% off your annual subscription, which means I think it's a little under or over $40 for an entire year of coverage,
yeah,
which is crazy. But you get all the good stuff, and you get to be part of a community of absolute psychopaths who also follow your team.
They do.
So get in there.
They love it. And I think you'll love it too. So go check it out. All right. Well, that'll wrap it up for David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys all enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.